Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. It's the 8th of September, and I think we have a fantastic broadcast for you today. We're going to be welcoming none other than New York State Assembly member Nader Sayers. He'll be our first guest this morning at 10 o'clock. And then on top of that, at 11 o'clock, we're going to be speaking to none other than former Yonkers city council member. So we have a lot to talk about today. And I see that Dr. Sayers is on the line at the moment. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Hezzy. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Looking forward. A happy Friday to you and everyone listening.
Well, thanks very, very much. Well, I'm just ecstatic about this new legislation that the governor signed at your behest, and it's all about education. And the thing that, you know, came to me right away after reading about this legislation is that what you've done is you've eclipsed this constant, lack of equity in our society. And what you've been able to do is you're able to eclipse the lack of equity, and you bring about equity by the type of legislation that you bring forward to the New York State Assembly. And it is so compelling, because everyone else is crying about, well, we're not getting this, we're not getting that. And what you do is you bring about legislation that affords everyone the same opportunity, because it also is a challenge to every one of us to do more, because we're not doing what we need to do in order to bring about equity. So we're just crying. And this is so unique that you're the only one that I have ever seen in government that has done that. So God bless you for it, because I don't know anyone else that has come to that level.
Hezzy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You know, anyone that knows, you know, I entered public service, you know, having accomplished, you know, I would say successful careers in law and education. And especially yes. You bring up education. Very few people have had the firsthand experience that I've had as a teacher, as a school principal for some 30 years. I was able to serve on the Board of Education, Board of Trustees, serve as president of the Yonkers School Board, the Big Five school boards. And one thing that I've always done as a educator is respected and promoted equity, an opportunity for all children. And to me, that was something that sometimes was lacking, not only in Yonkers, but across New York State and the country, where for various reasons, students weren't given the full opportunity to learn and to be motivated and mentored. And this legislation that earlier this week, 2 days ago, I was down in New York City at the United Federation of Teachers headquarters, and Governor Kathy Hochul and educational leaders joined. It was a major press conference, and it was the sign-in of my legislation, A68, Assembly Bill 68, that passed unanimously in the Assembly and the Senate. And it went to the governor, and the governor generally would sign bills and just make them law and give them back. Mm-hmm. But in this case, the governor decided to do a major press conference, because everyone involved in education realized the urgency and the importance of this type of legislation. What it does, it basically recognizes, I think all of us know, there's really a bad teacher shortage of qualified teachers that look at teaching as a profession they want to go. And it's not only teachers, it's the teaching profession. It could be college professors. It could be teachers that specialize in special education, in teaching English language learners, teachers that teach technology and sciences. And what this bill does, it recognizes that as New York State urban schools become more diversified, as we have in Yonkers, where we have a growing ethnic, interracial population, we want the children we teach to feel proud, in many cases, that the teachers that teach them look like them and have the same color and the same techniques and cultures and ethnicity and race. Why is that important? Because I looked at the data all across the nation and realized that it was so simple when kids in grade 1 to 3, for example, had a teacher that looked like them, you know, their success rate became doubled. And when there was 2 teachers that looked like them during these 3-4 years, the success rate tripled. And I said, hey, you know, not only do we have a teacher shortage, what do we do to not only promote more young people in colleges and even high schools to enter the teaching profession? What can we do to make sure that underrepresented populations also look at teaching as a great profession and really enter the profession? This legislation requires the state, the Board of Regents, BOCES, to work with SUNY and CUNY and other colleges and high schools and encourage and motivate and provide funding so that school districts can really reach out and motivate and encourage candidates from underrepresented communities. This is really hailed as a major, major piece of legislation in New York. And from what I understand, similar legislation may be forthcoming in surrounding states and possibly throughout the USA, where people would say, hey, let's follow the New York State legislation sponsored by Assemblyman Sayage, and let's make sure. Why is it important for me? Because I'm an educator. I'm a lifelong educator. You know, anyone that looks at my track record with not only legislation like this, but even dealing with the funding formula, with making sure they use updated census data, making sure that all schools are equipped with all the medical necessity devices that need to be in schools. Why? Because I know. I was a principal for 30 years, and I know the deficiencies firsthand, and I know the solutions to how to resolve them. So to your point, it's really common sense, you know, legislation that is based on experience, based on data, and that is equitable. Equitable, you know, legislation to me is crucial. That's what makes it fair. That's what makes it practical. And that's what gets you unanimous support. When people jump on your bandwagon, when you're sponsoring legislation, and they say, I want to be on board on this, because not only does it make sense, but it's a necessity. So I'm glad. And this week, you know, we'll definitely, you know, reach out. There's a number of news agencies that are doing special interviews on this Grow Your Own initiative. But I got to say, Hezzy, you're first in line. You know, you've always been proactive. And you're there to make the public aware, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk, especially about this Grow Your Own initiative. Again, supported by the Yonkers Federation of Teachers, NYSET, the state organization, United Federation of Teachers, and even a year ago talking to Samantha Rosado Cerriolo, who's the president of the Yonkers Federation of Teachers. She was, like, enthusiastic, and, you know, the YFT for years has been pushing this Grow Your Own initiative. But rather than just listening, I'm the type of legislator that not only listens, but, you know, takes notes. on a lot of issues that impact people. And I say, well, tell me what's right. Tell me what's wrong. Tell me how we can fix it. And sure enough, many of the legislative pieces we've passed in Albany really came as a result of talking to people and people telling you, I have an issue. Last year, we celebrated, you know, a special piece of legislation that exempted taxes in New York State on diapers. And that came as a result of people, if you recall, that basically told me, you know, people don't realize that one-third of mothers really can't afford diapers. And sometimes their kids have to stay in dirty diapers or wet diapers, sometimes a lot longer than they need to, resulting in serious rashes and other problems.
Yeah.
So when I looked into it, and it was really an embarrassment to see that we were taxing diapers. I mean, that's a hardship. That's a necessity. So, you know, we passed that legislation. It's now law in New York State where no one, no municipality or county or state entity can tax diapers. It was hailed as a major victory, not only for New York, but now other states all across the country are following similar legislation to exempt diapers from taxation. These are examples, Hezzy, of, you know, real needs and legislation that targets these real needs and provides the avenue to at least hopefully try to resolve or make it easier or more feasible for, you know, citizens that some of them are neighbors and family members and friends and people that we represent. So this Grow Your Own initiative.
So, go ahead. I didn't mean to stop you. Forgive me.
No, so this Grow Your Own initiative, you know, I see a major impact on not only addressing the teacher shortage, but I really feel that, you know, we can make sure, as we do with when we hire police officers or firemen or other, we focus on diversity. We focus on making sure that the people that are working for us, to a large extent, you know, reflect the makeup of our communities. Again, like I said earlier, because it gives pride, you know, to people that are receiving the service, and in this case, students that are receiving an education, to see individuals teaching them that look like them. And as I said, you know, it's evident from the data and the research that there's so much more success, you know, with student development and learning when you have this diversification. And again, that doesn't take away from the need to make sure that there's proper training to make sure that these individuals go through the process and they're qualified and licensed to teach in New York State. So it's a win-win, Hezzy.
Oh, definitely is. Again, the thing that compels me to even laud this legislation is that I see equity. It's like written all over the place. Rather than crying out that there's inequity, you've created an avenue and a venue by which people can elevate themselves for the benefit of society, and it also challenges them to just elevate their, infusion and, bringing something forward that they believe in, and they bring it to education, which will only be bringing us all kinds of benefits into the future. I mean, this is, well, when you're employed as a teacher and you become a teacher, then you're going to be living the dream for the rest of society for another easily 30 years, if not longer. And this is an investment in people and who are growing up in school, as well as the teachers that will be teaching them, is absolutely stupendous. How did you get to the point where, you know, whereas everybody else is crying that things are not equitable, you are able to decipher and go through all the muck that's out there, and you come to the very important point of being able to bring everything down to a level point where people recognize what the issues are, and you bring it about. And then this legislation, how is it going to become effective? Who's going to be promoting it now that the legislation's been passed? Other than, of course, your discussion about it.
No, of course. The legislation requires the Board of Regents that sets policy and sets initiatives and goals and missions for the Board of Regents to put out policy, you know, to, as I said earlier, especially under its control is the City University of New York, the State University, SUNY and CUNY, you know, all so many colleges in New York that are part of the SUNY and CUNY, they're basically right under the direction of the State Board of Regents. In addition, private colleges even get their marching orders from the State Education Department. So not only would they put out policy statements to organizations like BOCES and to even high schools and Board of Educations, you know, throughout the state to initiate and promote programs that encourages, you know, underrepresented communities and students in general to consider teaching as a profession, to develop programs where, you know, students in college and high school can shadow teachers and get community credits and really be given not only the motivation, but the early skills when you shadow a teacher and you become an assistant teacher, you know, during a certain time, with internships and programs like that, it gives these education students an opportunity to see firsthand the teaching profession. People say, well, it's going to cost money to initiate some activities and direction and guidance. True. So the governor made it very clear that with this legislation, she's providing funding, and she already announced 10 school districts for the first wave of funding where they would be given grants, you know, grants that would pay for the extra mentors and the training and the stipends and the motivation. And, of course, my goal is to make sure that a school district like Yonkers, excuse me, also gets funding, so we can work with the Federation of Teachers and others to really motivate our high school students, you know, to really look at teaching as a profession. And I have no problem. I've made it clear that I can even go and attend workshops personally as an educator, as a legislator, and really tell our students what a wonderful career it is to be a teacher. What a wonderful career to potentially be an administrator, be an educator. And as I said, well, there's so many different talents in the educational, speech therapists, teaching assistants, you know, guidance counselors, psychologists, social workers. These are all different professions that are really incorporated into the teaching profession. And they're wonderful careers where...
They are, but that's the question. Can you explain, because I could never figure out why so many people who have the educational background and could conceivably go into teaching, what has dissuaded them from going into the profession? Because it seems that less and less people were interested to go into education, and I don't know why it fell out of disfavor. It seems like it's been going on in the last 30 years.
You know, something as simple as bad guidance. For example, I often, you know, for many years, I try to touch the lives of so many young people that are in high school and colleges. And I basically tell them, you know, give them, you know, good advice. For example, most children that graduate and go to a four-year college to get their bachelor's degrees, so many of them go and they may have certain careers in mind. Oh, I love working in history and government and international affairs and politics and other areas. And I say to them, well, if your major is in entertainment law, or your major's in biology, you're going and you're majoring and you're getting a bachelor's degree in history or political science, what have you done with 40% of the courses they take in college are what they call electives. You can take any course you want. So I tell these students, in addition to your major, whatever your major is, why not go to the education department and rather than taking any nonsense course or electives, why don't you fulfill the requirements with the education department so that not only when you graduate you get your degree and your major, but you also have a minor in education, which means now when you finish, you know, if your bachelor's or major is in history, you know, God bless. But there isn't a lot of jobs available where with a history degree you can go unless you teach history. So I tell individuals, make sure as a backup, anytime you get a bachelor's degree, you also take the education credits. And it's not a lot of credits. It's maybe 4 or 5 courses max. And then if you do that, not only do you have your major in whatever field, and if you get into your field and you work at the UN or you do State Department or something you love doing, that's fine. But if not, then you have a backup where you're licensed to teach history or political science at a high school or at a college. But now you're also qualified to teach because people that may have a bachelor's, a master's degree in special areas, and they say, well, you know what, I couldn't get the job of my life, but I want to teach. Well, now you can't teach unless you're a substitute teacher or a teaching assistant. You know, the problem is you need a teaching license, you know, to teach in New York State. So you can have 10 degrees. If you don't have that teaching license, you know, you can't teach and you can't be hired. So what happens? These individuals have to serve in lower capacities or they got to go back to school and take the educational credits. So, you know, I look at cost effectiveness. I look at their time. And so many students have come back and said, thank you so much because you saved me time. You know, I feel I have more tools for my career to succeed. I'm not limited, you know. And many of them have become very successful teachers, and many of them in Yonkers. And for me, I'm proud, you know, when I see students that were my students when I was principal of School 13 or students that marched across the stage over the years and as president of the Board of Ed gave them their high school diplomas. You know, it's an honor. It's a privilege. And when you look at the faces and they represent the city and they're diversified, you know, that goes back to what we spoke earlier about the need, you know, to legislate across the board because as legislators, we represent everyone. You know, no matter what your racial background, what your ethnicity is, what your cultural values is, when you take on a position, especially as an educator or as a legislator, as I have, you got to make sure you legislate for the benefit and well-being of all your constituents. If that benefit, if that legislation promotes equity and benefits the different components and makeup of our community, great, because that's our goal. Our goal is to make sure when you wear that hat and that responsibility of a legislator, you need to represent everybody. You need to legislate. If you go to your own ethnic events and you celebrate with them and you're proud of who you are, your ethnicity or culture, to me, that's fine, and I encourage people never to forget, you know, who their ancestors are, what their background is. Appreciate.
I wanted
and
to
celebrate.
Ask you. No, you know, I hear what you're saying. I was wondering though if one of the issues that came about to bring this legislation forward is also has to do with age. Are the teachers that are in the profession at the moment getting older as well? I mean, we all are getting older, but do
yes.
we also need to resuscitate the number of teachers throughout our system across the nation? Because we are getting older.
But that's a
or
good
is that
point.
Not a factor?
No, it is a factor. I mean, to your point, many years ago, individuals that entered the teaching profession were largely female, and it
yes.
was really considered secondary income, where husbands generally
yes.
had other careers, and the wife mm-hmm. became a teacher. So, you know, the salary was important, but not as important as it is today. Back then, you know, they relied heavily on the salary of the husband in most cases, and the wife,
mm-hmm.
no matter what she earned as a teacher, was supplemental. But,
yes.
you know, 50 years ahead, we're now at a point where we recognize that the teaching profession is no longer secondary income. For 90% of people, it's really primary income, where people rely
mm-hmm.
on raising a family and paying their bills and mortgage and everything else, you know, on their salary.
Right.
So two things are happening. First, you know, yes, with the pandemic, many older teachers retired, many older teachers or others that, God forbid, might have gotten sick from the days of the
mm-hmm.
pandemic. And many decided, you know, leave the profession, some retired, which developed the shortage. And now with the social dynamics as it is, you know, most of the teachers, which is now more diversified, so it's not primarily female. And it's, again, as I said, it's people that rely on teaching as a primary source of income, which means now when labor organizations you know, lobby for better pay and better benefits, you know, and I generally appreciate their efforts because I know and understand that you got to pay a teacher a decent salary so we can motivate people that are qualified to look at teaching as a career, as a profession. And if you keep it at a level where we're paying teachers, you know, the same as many other professions that might not have required even college degrees or masters and so forth,
mm-hmm.
then there's an unfairness to that. So I've always been an advocate of whether, you know, public education teachers or even private teachers or charter school teachers and even college professors. For many years, some of the most effective college teaching was full-time professors. These were individuals that were professionals in the field. They committed their entire life to teaching that subject. They wrote books about it. They researched. But they were paid well as college professors full-time.
Well, let me just hold you up there for a moment because we have a caller. Maybe they want to ask a question or take a position that might be
sure.
pertinent here. So let me just bring
sure,
them in and
definitely.
See they have something to say. Good morning, caller. Can you give us your first name, and do you have a comment or a question? Or you're just listening? Okay, maybe they're just listening. So once I put you on hold, you'll be on hold, but you'll be able to hear. Okay, so that's exactly what we're going to do. All right,
sure.
So bear with me a moment. One second. Okay, so they're on hold, so they can listen in.
Okay.
So forgive me for the interruption.
No
so
problem.
Just where do we go? Where do we go to? How do we bring about a greater interest in people to look now that they know that the teaching profession is compatible in earning a living, being able to move out of your parents' home, or to move into your own home, wherever that happens to be, so
sure.
that it becomes affordable to become a teacher and not as a secondary supplement to whatever your spouse is earning, but that you can actually survive on your own with that one salary? And how is the teaching profession becoming a little bit more proactive toward that end? Is that happening as well?
Yeah, it's happening. I mean, yeah, locally, for example, you know, we start by, in this case, let's say using Yonkers as a model where we have what they call teaching assistants, right? These are individuals that in many cases have bachelor's degrees. Some of them are not licensed, but they have a bachelor's degree. And the other category is what they call teacher aides. These are people that really require a high school diploma. Some of them work in cafeterias. Some assist the teachers in playground cafeteria duties. And some of them are so outstanding that over the years, as a principal, I motivated so many of them to go back to college, get their credentials. And I got to tell you, over the years, I've seen so many teacher aides that I've worked with or teaching assistants that we've motivated and encouraged because we saw the talent they have. We saw the love they had for children, for education, and the skills they had. Some of them, you watch them, even though they're assisting the teacher, but you see how they encourage and work with students one-to-one, especially English language learners or special ed children. And they take the challenge of reinforcing learning with small groups, and you see their skills and you see their love and passion. And many of them have gone back to school, have gotten their credentials, and now teach. They are teachers. They have their own classrooms, their own group of students. And to me, I see this, and that's one major way. The other one is going to high schools and encouraging students about the teaching profession, to colleges. And for students that are listening, you know, if there is an interest, then of course they go to their guidance counselors in high schools or in colleges and say, hey, I'm interested in teaching. And then they'll guide them. They'll guide them as to what courses they need to take, what existing programs, internships, opportunities that they have to really have field experience, as they say, or shadow a teacher or someone in the educational field.
So, are you suggesting that with all of this stuff that's going on, has the only obstacle to more people of different ethnicities, of different color, considering education, has been literally the remuneration that they would have expected, that it wasn't enough to earn a living by becoming a teacher? So now more and more people are entering the profession?
Is that the stumbling block? It was. For many students that would have been outstanding teachers over the years, when I spoke to them, hey, you know, with strong science or technology or computer skills, I would say, well, why don't you consider teaching? And so many of them would say, well, you know, I have job opportunities with Morgan Stanley and, you know, in the business field or the tech field, excuse me, where I can make a lot more money, so why should I look at teaching? You know, but I think over the years, you know, the teaching profession and the starting salaries of teachers is much better today than it was, let's say, 10 years ago. I think the combination of making the profession more of a profession and making sure that the compensation or the salaries are such where, as we said earlier, someone can look at the salary and the benefits, which are great, you know, and feel, hey, I can be a great teacher. I can put all my efforts and skills into this profession, make it a lifelong profession, and I can feel comfortable that I can raise my family. And sure enough.
Okay, bear with me a moment. Let's see. It looks like we may have another caller on, so we'll see if they're going to respond. Bear with me a moment. Good morning, caller. Do you have a comment or do you have a question you would like to pose to our guest?
I'm actually just listening. At the moment.
No problem. Then I'll leave you on hold. You'll be able to come in if you want to, but you could listen, that's for sure. So,
okay.
You know, Dr. Sayers, how do we get to the point where we, instill a sense of responsibility, but also a sense of valuable profession to the people who are now graduating schools? How do we bring them forward to consider, hey, teaching is a good profession, but at the same time, it's also a responsibility, because it is a challenge, isn't it? Instead of thinking we're going to a brokerage firm where I guess you could make a hell of a lot more with similar skills, what's the trajectory that will infuse a sense of responsibility of young people who could say, hey, I have a choice. I could teach or I could do something else. Since now financially they may not be equitable, but it's certainly a livable wage, which is, I guess, at the end of the day, that's the baseline. So what do we do about that? How do we change the demeanor of young people?
Well, it's through this legislation, Hezzy. That's the whole purpose of the Grow Your Own initiative. The whole purpose is to say, hey, let's get state government, the institutions involved with education, from high schools to colleges to BOCES, you know, and communications will will go out from the state ed department. For example, impact in Yonkers, for example. Schools like Westchester Community College, like SUNY Purchase, local colleges, Elizabeth Seton, these institutions will be given guidelines of how to promote the teaching profession among their students and their schools. And as I said earlier, in many cases, funding will be provided to either pay stipends or pay for extra staff or counselors to really or promote more courses on educational learning and more field experiences. Student teaching is a crucial area where students that are
I wanted to ask you about that. For example, Yonkers is a very unique community. We have a conglomeration of many different people of different colors and ethnicities and religions. It's huge in that sense. It's certainly, the third largest city population-wise in the state.
Sure.
And yet, when we compare ourselves, I guess we're really quite similar as far as demographics and percentages, however you divide communities like New York. So in a sense, that tells us one thing about Yonkers. But how does this translate, for example, to Oswego? Or how does it translate to Albany? Or how does it translate to Buffalo when the demographics are different in each one of these places? And so have they been deficient, you know, like, I don't know if Buffalo is more homogeneous one way or the other or not, as opposed to Yonkers or New York or whatever.
Yeah.
Does every community need to redefine all this legislation so that it ameliorates the needs of their student population?
Well, you're right. I mean, you know, you mentioned we're the third largest city. The only two states in New York that are larger than Yonkers in population are New York City and Buffalo. You know, this last census, you know, and data, you know, put us ahead of Rochester. We were number four for a while. Now we're number three. And you're right.
Right.
There isn't much difference in the demographics, let's say, in Buffalo and Yonkers. But you know, I've been a big advocate of changing the way the state funds education. And when you talk about equity, yes, Yonkers, in my opinion, there's a tremendous amount of inequity as far as the amount of funding we get per kid for Yonkers from the state.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? because the way the state funding formula is so based on the wealth of the county you live in, and we in Yonkers, we're part of Westchester. That's really a rich county, right? But then,
well, how
look
do we
at
how do we make a, how do we but how do we correct that? That's been going on for all the years that I've been in Yonkers reporting about Yonkers. The last 25 years, that has never changed.
Right.
How do we change that dynamic?
You change it by legislation, and there's Sage-sponsored legislation presently in Albany that would change the funding formula. And I specifically set the right criteria that I think as an educator should be utilized more so to reflect how much funding the state gives us. And it clearly goes to the enrollment pattern, the number of special ed kids we're serving, the number of English language learners we're serving. The wealth of the county, of course, is a factor, fine. But more important, the percentage of
should the wealth of the county of which we're part, should we as a city extricate ourselves from the county and be separate in order to be able to get a funding that's appropriate for our population and for our wealth, because we're not Scarsdale, and we're not a lot of these other communities that are very well to do. We're just not part of it.
And many people in Yonkers over the years have looked at that and said, hey, you know, within Westchester County, we're the largest city municipality. You know, we're nearly 30% of the population of the county. Some people have advocated that, hey, you know, take Yonkers away from Westchester, make it Yonkers County, City of Yonkers and Yonkers County. And some people have even said, let's look at the regional, like the Bronx or New York City, which in my opinion, you know, is very similar in many ways to Yonkers, or we're similar to them as far as social demographics or our school system. You know, why not just switch us from the regional wealth index of Westchester or the lower Hudson region and tie us
make
in
us a borough.
The borough, the Bronx, or the city.
Right,
but,
to make us a borough of Yonkers.
But I feel the cleanest and the best way to address it was changing the funding formula so that it's equitable, it's across the state, because you and I spoke on the show often. You know, years ago, politicians lobbied for changes that impact just Yonkers. My approach has been to lobby for a funding formula that applies equitably all across the state, because you know, we're not much different. There's the same needs in Mount Vernon, in New Rochelle, in White Plains, in Peekskill, in Poughkeepsie, and Newburgh, and other communities across the state. So I'm arguing. By the way, the good news is last session in the Assembly, they finally put in the budget $1 million, and it calls for an investigation and research of the state funding formula. This is all as a result of my legislation. This is in the direction of saying, you know what, fine. Even something as simple as the state presently using the 2000 census data. Imagine they're still using census data from 23 years ago to determine the student makeup and what students should be funded. I tell them not only this year, students from 2 years ago weren't even born at that time in 2000. So these are, you know, strong legislative initiatives that I believe will address issues impacting education across the state. I feel they promote more equity, whether it's in funding, in services. Why is that important? Because if Buffalo gets $12,000 of state funding per kid, and Yonkers gets $6,000, for example, that's like 50% more. People say, well, Yonkers, you have more taxes, you know, pay for the extra services. How much can you put pressure on taxpayers? My legislation would fix the funding formula so Yonkers gets a greater share. This way we don't have to cut music and art and sports and library and gymnasiums and so forth, which is crucial. You know the impact of support services. When they talk about crime and they talk about mental illness, and they don't realize that 90% of it starts in the public school system or at the elementary level, where if you don't provide students that have issues or concerns with proper support services, with counseling and social workers and school psychologists and independent learning plans through special ed, many of these kids fall through the cracks. And then when they have nothing to resort to, you know, they become, you know, in many cases, you know, problem cases academically, emotionally, socially, and often, you hate to say it, leads to criminal activity. So, you know, I often argue when they talk about police funding, they speak about bail reform, they talk about social issues that impact us, crime and drug addiction. You know, let's look at the source. Let's go back to the base of how you can really address. You can't just continue the Band-Aid, you know, let me try to fix it when it goes out of whack. You know, you have to do that, but at the same time, you got to go down to the source and say, what are we doing as a society that is not addressing or catching these concerns early on, so we can at least, you know, get people on the right track before they have to resort to being homeless or drug addicted or, you know, violent criminals and so forth. And,
we don't have a mechanism like that, do we, in our society? I don't know what society has that. Or is it that we're just not wealthy enough in order to be able to have all those support systems? We're not, I don't know, there may be countries around the world that do a better job of it than we, but then again, we don't have a rich community. And we suffer because of the way the equity in funding for the city of Yonkers, for example. Same thing with Mount Vernon. Absolutely. And they're more homogeneous, I think, than we are.
Well, you're right. See, the state, the last 2 years, restored foundation funding. They improved the funding for education during the pandemic. There was a lot more federal funding, you know, that went into urban education. You know, sadly, we increased the amount of mental illness support and other funding. But again, that's fine. But again, you know, what we need to do is make sure that educational funding is protected permanently. And the way to do that is, A, fixing the funding formula. And the other way to do it is to promote the concept of improve your educational system, provide the necessary support, even though it may cost you more, you know, to make it efficient and effective. It's a lot more cost effective than when you have a failing system and you got to treat the ills of that system later on in life with jails and criminal justice.
But that's the question. You mentioned the statistical report of our population and so on and so forth. And those censuses that are 20 years old, they actually are the cause of this, isn't it? Because we're not using the latest population data, and therefore our students, whoever they are, wherever, in whatever community, are the ones that are failing because they're not being funded appropriately. Why isn't there equity across the entire state where everybody gets the same amount? Why should there be a differential when it comes to education? Isn't that supposed to be a baseline? What's the problem?
Well, there should be a baseline that allows every child in New York State, which is a constitutional right, to a quality.
Correct.
And
so we talk about it, but we don't impose it.
You know what?
Into our culture.
Hezzy, the bottom line is you need more legislators. I hate to say it, like me, that understand that legislate, that are realist when it comes to policy and legislation. And some people sometimes will question and say, as a legislator, are you supposed to be there just representing one segment to the community? And really,
no.
In my
that's
opinion,
where a lot of people go, but that's where they go wrong. They're only looking at one segment. Yes.
No, so yes. I often say, as a legislator, when you're elected, once election is over, you're no longer representing just Democrats or Republicans or independents.
But that's the point. People don't understand vocabulary. Equity defines it. Equity means that everyone is equal in the eyes of the law in order to be able to give them and serve them in an equitable manner. With respect,
no, that's true.
And at the same time, with demand for responsibility on their part in order to become and be part of society.
That's
you can't
right.
ask for more than, even though there was inequity for many, many years, and there still is, the point is we could bring it forward by respecting one another and defining what equity is and giving it to everyone and not denying it from some. And that's
exactly.
where it goes wrong.
You know what?
And that's the beauty of your legislation. Well, I can't laud you enough because you see the difference.
Thank you very much. Hezzy, you know, I often, you know, we all wear our ancestors' hats.
Yes.
We all have our different
Absolutely.
Ethnicities and cultures. and God knows, you know, I get sometimes, you know, inquiries from even my community. You know, I'm a Jordanian American, but all my life I've been here. And people will often say, you know, well, what have you done for your community? And I say, well, you know, by promoting the general health of a city and the entire community and legislating and working hard, you know, the goal is to make everybody rise, to make everybody benefit from legislation. And very
but you know
often,
what's interesting is you bring forward a concept that I guess you and I are both Semites from different sides of the border. But the bottom line, line is that at the end of the day, what you're suggesting and what you've brought about in legislation is something that's old because it doesn't demand any particular, I guess, elevation of one group over another. But what it's saying is, hey, our populations are changing. Yonkers was different 25 years ago than it is today. There are communities that have changed color, that have changed ethnicities. Nobody planned it. It just is for whatever reason. But the bottom line is the only way to ameliorate the problems that we have today is to define equity and to build toward it. And that's what we've lost. And that's the beauty of your legislation is it redefines what I grew up with and my understanding of the way things can be. And rather than just giving some and not others. So that's
well,
where the
right.
bias
you
is,
know,
and that's where equity redefines the equation.
But you're right. See, in the bottom line, Hezzy, you know, we need to promote legislation, policies, initiatives like this Grow Your Own initiative, right, that recognizes the need for diversity. But you do it in a general way where you educate, you promote, you know, you do it in a positive way. You don't do it in a way where some segments of our community, point fingers at each other, develop more polarization, more division, where I'm attacking the establishment, I'm attacking, you know, put the attacks aside and focus on initiatives that bring everybody up. Because the general goal is
I know, but is it difficult for society to say, hey, I no longer will expose my bias toward this group or that group for whatever reason, when I can actually elevate everyone at the same time? So I don't focus my attention specifically, even to those people who have not had equity to this point. But can we elevate everyone to a same point eventually? It may not happen overnight. Even legislation is not going to be able to change all that, but it's demeanor.
I've been in Yonkers practically all my life, you know, so you're talking about over 60 years, and grew up in Southwest Yonkers. And it's amazing how in a city like Yonkers, I guess firsthand knowledge and experience, you see the evolution of different ethnicities and groups that have come to our city, and they establish businesses, they educate their children, and they move on, and they buy homes, and they buy, and they educate their kids, and, you know, where a generation ago, you know, they were all laborers working at Stewart Stampin or different companies, the textiles and restaurants. And then you see their kids are doctors and lawyers and professionals and engineers and teachers. And, you know, that same pattern has gone now. And even when you look at the present Yonkers population, and recently started meeting a lot of the newcomers, whether Mexicans or Salvadorians or Venezuelans and others, and you realize, you know, they're even different from the mainstream Latino growth population. You know, even though
they're different cultures,
stronger, they're different, and their needs are different. So, you know, you got to be able, and I've tried to help many of these groups with filing what they call 501c3 corporations. These allow them to be for profit. This way they can get a group of people together, have a board of trustees. They can begin to legislate, you know, policies or initiatives that benefit their community. They can begin to provide and reach out for grants and services from the state, from the local city. And these are the type of initiatives that, in my opinion, you know, promote the growth of these, especially ethnic, new, growing communities. But we do it in a way where you're not attacking the system. You can tell the system that, hey, you got to open your doors. You got to make it easier for people to move on and grow. But I'm a big advocate of do it in a positive way. Do it where you promote harmony. You promote acceptance where whoever is a controlling factor in the community, and the makeup is different in communities across the state and the nation. Mm-hmm. But the key is to work together. The key is not to put on gloves and say, I'm going to take you out of power and I'm going to destroy you because if I want to get ahead, you know, no, I want to join you. I want the same opportunity you have. I want you to make sure that my family and my kids have the same opportunity you and your family have. That's why something as this Grow Your Own initiative approaches the initiative that way, where teaching is one of the most productive, viable professions in our society. And when you initiate legislation like this and you encourage so many ethnicity and diversification and people to become interested, you're addressing that equity. You're making sure that you're providing job opportunities for many individuals where it might have been closed or difficult in the past. You're making sure you're safeguarding your students by giving them individuals from their own communities that look like them that can basically motivate them and say, hey, See, I'm like you. I came as an immigrant, and I'm a teacher today. I'm a principal. I'm a professional. You can be the same. So that, and as I said earlier, the data shows clearly these type of initiatives work. When you see student success among immigrant or minority communities double and triple because of the diversification of people involved, it's a success story. When you see diversification in the police department, you know, it definitely, in my opinion, reduces crime. When you have an issue in an inner city school and the police officers responding, you know, look like the people they're serving, in my opinion, that promotes or de-escalates potentially problems. So I think we're on the right track. I think we have a lot of work to continue to work on. But opportunities like this, Hezzy, on your show, to speak about them, make people more aware, let people know, you know what? Everyone should develop, as I have, an attitude of the glass is half full. You know, a lot of what we do in life, in business, in family, in our careers, in my opinion, focuses on attitude. And something as simple as having a positive attitude that my glass is half full, not half empty, goes a long way and really teaches people that, hey, so that's the message.
We have to do a wrap-up. That is the message. Well, thank you so much. A very, very pertinent and timely message. We don't hear it often enough, so thank you. Well, I have to let you go, and then we'll speak to you soon. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All the best to you. Goodbye.
Best to you.
All right. Let's bring in our next guest. Bear with me a moment. Okay. I think this will probably be Fernando Fuentes. Good morning, sir. How are you? That's
I'm
wonderful.
Very well,
you know, the problem with this Blog Talk Radio is I don't know who's calling. Just to have numbers. But I don't know the numbers. So that's what it is. So I'm always guessing who's calling. So first of all, good morning, and what a pleasure to be able to speak to you on the radio.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Hezzy.
Well, you know, I'm looking back on some of the stuff that you've written, of course, and I thank you for allowing us to publish them. Your thoughts about the different communities that you've represented for years. You were a former council member on the Yonkers City Council for many, many years. You expressed the positions and requirements of the Hispanic community, but the Hispanic community is extremely diverse. You know, there's a difference between someone from Chile or Paraguay or Peru as opposed to the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico or Cuba or however you define it. How did you bring all of this stuff together? Because there are similarities, but there are also differences in culture and in heritage, which is different in Peru than it is in Brazil or Argentina.
Yeah.
But if you don't travel, thank God, I haven't traveled to every country in South America, but to many. But the beauty is, it is so different. It is so different. I mean, it's just amazing the differences between communities. And you could just feel it, and you could sense it, and the heritage is different, and the culture is different. How did you bring it all together? Or is it
just the language
of Spanish that brought it forward?
Let me tell you what happened. I guess you have to go back in history a little bit, if you don't mind, Hezzy. We're just going to go briefly into a historical perspective in Yonkers.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 70s, the Hispanic community was approximately, by the census of 1970, I believe about 8,000 Hispanics living in Yonkers. And it was just as diverse as it is today. It was a lot of South American, Central American. Mm-hmm. There was some Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Colombians. There was some Panamanians. You had Spaniards here. So there was a lot of organizations being founded at that time in the 1970s. There was the Colombian Club, the Cuban Club, the Puerto Rican Club, the Dominican Club. There was clubs all over the place in Yonkers when I started working here in 1977.
See, that's before my time, though. I missed all of that legacy.
But I think it's important. It's important that every one of them had their club. But one person had a vision. One person and a group of people got together. But one person was Father Antonio Sagrista. And Antonio Sagrista, who was a Jesuit, says we can continue to have all those clubs, which is fine, but we must have one entity that really encompasses them all. And so he formed the Spanish Community Progress Foundation. And in Spanish, it's la Fundación para el Progreso de la Comunidad Hispánica. And it was basically to bring all of those people together, all of those groups together. And the board of directors was made up of people from all of those countries. We had Mexicans, we had Ecuadorians, we had Colombians, we had Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Central Americans, and Panama. I remember from Panama, from El Salvador, and we had various people from different countries on the board of directors. And that was the purpose of it was to work for all the Latinos, not like the clubs that were really basically a club for the Colombians or the Puerto Ricans or the Cubans or the Dominicans or South Americans or Mexicans. And that started in 1970. So that was a tremendous vision of bringing people together.
And so what brought them all together? What allowed all these different people from different cultures, even though they all except maybe Brazil spoke Spanish. What was it that brought them together and yet at the same time allowed them to rise to a level of homogeneity by creating this group? Because that meant dropping a lot of the things that defined them. But that was a huge move, don't you think?
It was, let me tell you. And I was honored to really be a part of them in the beginning because they asked me to be their first executive director at the time. And that's how I started my role in Yonkers in 1977. But what brought us together was we saw the plight of the Latino community in Yonkers. You had inadequate housing, inadequate education. You had inadequate, health care. You had a myriad of issues that were impacting the Latino community, such as going to, receive social services or immigration issues. Where do I go? The language barrier was tremendous. And so through the language, we brought together Father Antonio Sagrista with other members of the board, brought this institution into the forefront in the political world, in the economic world, in the housing world, in the court systems. There were very few bilingual, bicultural people working in any capacity in the city of Yonkers to deal with the plight of the Hispanic issue. And so that's how we started getting funds so that we can hire people to help the community in housing court, to help the community by going to the hospital with them as the interpreters, by going to, the Department of Social Services so that they can qualify and be certified as to get Medicare or Medicaid or whatever services they needed, to submit to them their resume, to help them, the younger people with their resumes, to get them to look for employment in the city of Yonkers and Westchester County. So those are the types of things. We visited the schools, talking to mothers and parents as to what's going on in Yonkers and how we can help them. And it didn't have a Colombian or a Dominican or a Puerto Rican or El Salvadorian or Mexican flavor. It was a Latino flavor, and that was in the 1970s when the Spanish Foundation was flourishing in the city of Yonkers.
So has everything evolved from that time is there greater equity, or is the struggle still continuing? Because I get the impression that the struggle continues, and it hasn't been leveled to a point of equity. And why is that, after so many years? Why?
Well,
does language separate us?
I think
speak seven languages, but Spanish is not one of them.
I don't think it's so much language. I think it's political influence, political participation.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the issue of them not being involved in the fabric of Yonkers. I mean, you know, and I know, in Yonkers, it's a network. It's a network of families. It's a network of communities.
Yes.
I can remember when a group of Italians in Westchester County said, you know, it's our time because our numbers are great now, are growing.
Right.
We're going to run for district attorney and for mayors, and we're going to run for council. And I can remember those
mm-hmm.
days. And I remember if you read the Herald Statesman of the old days,
yes.
you'll see those quotes from these individuals. And that has not happened as of yet, in my opinion, with the Latino community, whereby we may have one or two Latinos that are elected. But if you look at, I think you know it very clearly from my writing, in reference to employment, in reference to
yes.
housing, economic development, if you're talking about education, you know, it's our numbers are still low. Our numbers are still low. I believe there are 2,400.
Yeah, but is that because of the earning capacity of the Hispanic community in totality, as opposed to any one particular community of people from different Latin nations? Is that the driving force at the end of the day? Equity in a community that is so filled with so many different ethnic groups? Is that always about money?
Well, it's not only about money, but it's a large part of our lives. In other words,
okay.
what happens in reality
yeah.
is that, excuse me, that, you know, every community, like all the prior communities, we want to sit at the table. They want to sit at the table. They want to sit at
right.
the table and say, hey, we're now 40% of the population of Yonkers. There are approximately,
uh-huh.
and I'm giving you rough figures. You know, it's a variable that changes, but it's about 215,000 people in the city of Yonkers, more or less, and
mm-hmm.
there are approximately anywhere from 85,000 to 90,000 Latinos in the city of Yonkers. You know, so you're talking about approximately between 40 and 45% of the population is Latino in the city of Yonkers. That's a significant
okay.
number. It's a significant number. And if you look at it in reference to not only employment, but economic development as well. I mean, I always talk about economic development as well. You know, it's
sure.
an issue that,
it's important.
That it's very important. But, you know, you look at the people that are the developers in the city of Yonkers, and you got the Simone family, the AMS Corporation,
mm-hmm.
you have Extel,
yeah.
iPark, Avalon, RXR. You know, and a few others, the Ginsburg
yeah.
family. Those are people that have been doing business in Yonkers since the year of the flood. And
mm-hmm.
my point is that you know, that there has not been, as you well know, as they say, you got a network to get employment, you got a network to get here, you got a network to get contracts.
Right.
We're not at the network level because, you know, the people that are involved here have been networking with the power-based in the city of Yonkers for years and years. So, you know, there are the Velez family, I know, in New York that do construction. There's the Ferre family that does in Miami. There's a lot of them throughout the United States that I've seen and would love to participate in some of the things in Yonkers. But there's no outreach, and there's no follow-up, and there's no invitation, and there's no participation because they're really not looking forward to get my drink.
No, I do. So, What's missing with such a large population of the city of Yonkers being of Hispanic heritage? And also many of them are bilingual to that end as well. Why isn't that reflected in our voting? Why don't we see a greater number of people of Hispanic background that are elected into office? And so I don't know where the disconnect is, because population-wise, there should be a greater emphasis on ameliorating some of the ills of the society, particularly that denigrate the Hispanic community, as opposed to elevate them all, so that there is equity in the system. Somehow we're missing equity, and I don't understand why.
Well,
is there a bias against the Hispanic community?
I'll give you as an example. Sometimes they'll do everything possible to block you in getting on the ballot. And I'll put you as an example. I'll give Fernando Fuentes. When I first ran for office, the first time they did everything possible to knock me off the ballot. They went through the whole system, the judicial system, to knock me off the ballot. And I went to the Supreme Court. You're talking about legal fees also, so it's a lot of money involved. Went to the Supreme Court, and then they of course, if you went in the Supreme Court, they take you to the appellate court in Brooklyn. And then you go to Brooklyn, and then you appear before, whatever, five judges, and then they appeal that one, and then they take you to the state court of in Albany, the Court of Appeals in Albany.
Right.
So by the time you're through,
fortune of money.
You're in debt. You're in debt over your head, and so you need to know that if you put your foot forward, you have to be ready. You have to be ready to go through the judicial system, whether they're right or wrong, because they're gonna try to basically dry you up financially so that you can't continue the struggle.
So does that struggle from the past that you've eloquently brought forward to the present in our discussion, has that been ameliorated? Is that going to happen again, or have we gone beyond that? Are we now?
Well,
can we say that things are equitable from the in the election process now?
They'll constantly. You got to understand the state of New York. The laws are very complicated in reference to getting on the ballot. I think it's one of the most complicated states in the United States. I mean, in other states, I think you pay a fee and you can get on the ballot. In other states, you can pay X amount of dollars and you're on the ballot. Here, you got to go through a system that you would not believe. So, I mean, not too long ago, if you remember, I believe Dr. Hernandez from the Board of Ed was knocked off the ballot when he wanted a primary.
I remember that very well. Yes.
So then you had recently a petition drive that was overruled or overvoted by the city clerk in reference to term limits getting on as a referendum as an issue that will be on the ballot. So there's a lot of ways that they stop it, and the machine, they know how to block people.
What do you mean? I don't know. I mean, just as there's so many mechanisms to dissuade people from coming out and voting and being heard.
I'll give you an example.
Does that happen in every community, or is it specific to Yonkers?
No, I'm sure it happens.
Because it must happen everywhere.
I've traveled the United States, and I've seen it everywhere. I've been asked to speak in different states and different cities. And the issues there are the same, very similar to the ones here in Yonkers. I mean, an example.
So what is it about the human dynamic that causes that? Is it always like it's all about me and not about you? Is that how it works? It does seem that way. That's the human condition.
People want to remain in power. I'll give you an example.
Yes.
I mean, an example would be, as you all know, there are approximately 57,000 registered Democrats in the city of Yonkers, more or less. Approximately 5,700 or 5,700 voted for the current mayor. And about 2,700 voted for his challenger. So you're talking about the mayor received 10% of the vote of the registered Democrats in the city of Yonkers. So that you're talking about... That out of 57,000, approximately 50,000 stayed home and 7,000 voted, mm-hmm. more or less. So, you know,
yeah.
that's, you know, why does that happen? Because there's a prime voter list in Westchester County, like they are anywhere in the United States. And the concentration,
mm-hmm.
is on getting the prime voters out, not all the voters out, because it's too expensive to have to reach out to 57,000 voters. They'd rather just concentrate on what they call the prime voters. And those prime voters are people who understand the process. Those are people that their job's on the line. Those are people that are family of the you know, elected officials. Those,
right.
are people that are friends of the elected officials. They have a vested interest to make sure that there's continuance in power of those individuals.
So is there any way, based on that reality, which I think is so eloquently expressed by you, but that's the reality, is there a way of changing this dynamic or no?
Well,
and what does it, what will it require? What will it require to change the dynamic where there's equity everywhere?
Well,
and that's a lack of that. That's a term that we hear, but we never see it come about.
Yeah, I agree. In other words, to get out the voters, you really need, you know, as anybody else, you need charismatic people out there.
Well, that's very interesting that you use the term charismatic, because when I looked at the last election, there were people running for office in name only, didn't hear anything from them. They never issued any press notice whatsoever to anybody. They were like, and I even ended up writing. I said, what's your position? You may be a Democrat, you may be a Republican, you may be an independent. How do you define yourself to actually serve every one of us? Because some are independent, some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are who knows, some other party affiliation. How does your posture reflect the community that you want to serve? Because we're all different. So, yet at
Absolutely.
The same time, we all have specific and similar needs. We need to have
Absolutely.
A job. We need to have the education. We need to feel safe. All of these things come into play. And yet, I couldn't get a definition from people, and they never told us who they were, and they never defined themselves. I don't know if they even know who they are, because they never defined themselves. They just haven't had a name. And they figured we would all vote for them.
Yeah.
They're out of their minds. Unfortunately, though, they were right. We did vote for them because that was the only name we knew.
Yeah.
And who was the challenger? We didn't have one. No legitimate challenger. You know how many people ran for mayor? Did you ever hear from them? I never heard from them.
I know.
And we have probably the largest population of people coming to our website in the entire county. And I didn't hear from them. It's not like we're dead. So, you know.
Well, I mean, that's...
Not yet. Thanks to the doctors
yet.
At Columbia Presbyterian. Not because
Thank
of me.
Thank God is right. Thank God is right. No, but you're absolutely right, Hesse. In other words, you know, how do we in Yonkers or throughout the country, a lot of people don't understand the importance of a primary election. In reality, in Yonkers, the primary election sometimes is the election. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes, most times. If you win, as you well know, I believe there are 57,000 registered Democrats in the city of Yonkers. I believe there are about 18,000
mm-hmm.
registered Republicans. So the numbers, you know, basically tell you a lot. And that's why one of the reasons in 2012, you know, the current mayor who was a Republican became a Democrat. He saw that he could not win in Yonkers.
Right.
It was going to be very difficult. I shouldn't say that he can't, but it would be more difficult to win as a Republican in the city of Yonkers. So he became a Democrat. And that happens, and now he's running as a Democrat for the city of Yonkers as mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I guess because he's able to straddle both Republican and Democratic sides of the aisle, and maybe that's what embellishes his outcome as far as voting concerns. Some people still vote for him because he's a Democrat, or still vote for him because he was a Republican. Who knows? Things change. And a lot of it has to do also with the persona rather than the politics of Democrat or Republican. Do we actually know the difference between a Democrat and Republican in today's day? Or is it all personalities that we're voting for? Because I wonder.
I think, I don't know. I mean, I think personality and family name are very important in the city of Yonkers.
Yeah.
You know, so recognition of a name is critical, right? In other words, everybody knows the current mayor, and everybody knows the current mayor's brother, and everybody
right.
knows the current mayor's, deceased father. And
right.
I know them for as long as I've been in Yonkers, and it's a hardworking family. They've done well for themselves, and they've organized well. They've done, you know, a lot of good things, and I always say you have to acknowledge the good things as well as the bad things. And so I'm
almost
a firm believer in, you know, giving them credit where credit is due. And
as I do other mayors
that were before him.
You know what I found interesting? I once wanted to figure out, like, what is it that causes people to come out to vote? And the incumbent always has an upper hand one way or the other. It doesn't matter who that incumbent happens to be. But what's fascinating is that when you look at Yonkers, for example, and the mayor, people vote for the mayor, like, why is it that the mayor gets, like, over 60% of the vote goes to him? And a lot of it has to do with the reality that the guy who's paying you is the person that, well, the person that's paying you is defined by how many people work for the city. So the city of Yonkers and the Yonkers Board of Education, they are employed, thousands of them that are employed in the city of Yonkers, which is very, very interesting, because those 5,000 people actually translate to as much as 15,000 votes. And how could that be? Because we are not a young city. We're probably closer to 55 to 65 years of age as a population of the people who are employed. And it turns out that each one of them is married, whether gay or straight, makes no difference. So from 5,000 employees, you get 10,000. And then because of the age, they probably all have at least one child. So now you have 5,000 employees who've now become 15,000 votes. And do you know how many people it took to vote the mayor in last time? Only 13,000. And they're all basically connected to employees. That's the reality of Yonkers. Most people don't see that.
I understand. No, it's true, that's the reality. It's very true. I mean, my issue is very clear. In other words, there has to be a voting block, a Latino voting block in the city of Yonkers. We could be Republican. We could be Democrat. We could be conservative. We could be liberal. It doesn't matter. We could be from Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, El Salvador, Nicaragua.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But there needs to be a voting block when it comes to inclusion, when it comes to participation of Latinos in city municipal government. And I'm talking at all levels. I'm not talking only about employment. I'm talking about board membership.
Can that bring about equity? And why isn't that recognized by the entire Hispanic community? Why aren't they being brought together? What is lacking here?
You probably need a glue, you know? You need somebody...
Uh-huh.
Hopefully in the future, or hopefully in the not too distant future, someone who would be able to be the glue to say, listen, we appreciate all the things that City Hall does, whomever the mayor may be. We appreciate all the things.
Right.
They support our festivals, they support our our holidays. They support our, you know, festivals that we have in the parks and in the streets, and they support our dinner dances, and they support all of these things. But I think the most important
but
thing
that we need
satisfying.
To say. That's not satisfying enough. That's like a puff piece.
Yeah, but
it means nothing.
Some people feel that that's important, and that's okay. I think that's important also, but that's not enough.
Yeah, to some extent, but it doesn't create equity.
No. So, I mean, as I said, what's the important things and the important aspects in reference to the person who is going to bring the glue that's going to bring all of these different factions together? You need somebody that's going to say, hey, wait one second. We appreciate what City Hall is doing and everything else in reference to our festivals and our, you know, participation in activities and X and Y, but we need to talk about one. We're 15% of the workforce and we're 40% of the population. There's something wrong there, number one. Number two, you're talking about also, you have, as I mentioned before, about 5, 6, 7, 8 developers in the city of Yonkers. You know, there are Hispanic developers that can participate in the city of Yonkers. Has there been any reach out to these corporations that would want to participate?
Well, maybe not, but that's the question. Do we need to reach out to them, or is it not pertinent? And are these business people who would look like us or speak like us, have they no interest in the city of Yonkers to develop here?
They have interest. They have interest in the city of Yonkers, but historically, many of them have been given their the city has turned their back on them. So, as a business person, they don't want to participate.
So why don't we hear that? Why is it that too few people are aware of that dynamic that exists? Doesn't that continue to drive the inequity that we see?
I always say the facts speak for themselves. If you look at the economic development in the city of Yonkers, most of the people are the same. If you look at historically, look at the corporation, look at the entities that have received all of the development in the city of Yonkers, let's say the last 20 years.
Okay. So that was then.
You're right, 100%.
Who were then and are still now in charge.
It's then and now.
It's still something that we're living through. So how does one change that dynamic, or can we change it, and what will it require? How do we bring about equity? Is it talking about it, or is it?
No, I think you got it through action. You need action. I mean, I know that, you know, your prior guest, Assemblyman Nader Sage, which I support in his activities in reference to his educational initiatives that he's talking about today in reference to Grow Your Own. I support that 100%. I think Nader Sage as an Assemblyman has done an outstanding job in the city of Yonkers representing all the people of Yonkers.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree on one thing.
What?
You know, he says you can't attack the system. You got to go slow and be a part of the system and a kumbaya, and we're going to be friendly and we're going to be, you know, we're going to get our share eventually.
I agree with you. I think it needs to be more in your face. It's got to be in people's face. They have to know that this is a reality that they have to accept.
Absolutely, there's an inequality here, and it's like hitting you in the face, and you can't say, well, let's be friends and we're gonna go and you know, walk around the city and love each other and hug each other. It's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
And you know, who has power is not gonna give it up.
No one is giving it up because they all want to hold on to the prowess that they've gained. But how do we develop a more I guess, how do we develop more people who are concerned about the community and are willing to also balance it out in a different way? And maybe balancing it out, meaning to give everyone an opportunity. If the population is great, we need to create that equity based on the population as well, no? And it shouldn't be biased because of color or religion or ethnicity. And why do we go there? Is it because we're protecting the powers that be? And who are they anyway at the end of the day if they're not serving everybody? I don't get it.
I love May to say just grow your own legislation. Yeah, but I would take it to a different level, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I would take it to a political level. Let's grow our own Latinos that are becoming professionals in this city. And, I mean, I would venture to say if you ask someone tomorrow in the street or at a meeting, how do you become a council member? How do you run for mayor?
Uh-huh.
How do you run for county legislator? How do you run for assembly member? How do you run for the New York State Senate? And I would mention to say that the majority of people have no idea. So we need some civic
most people don't. You're 100% right. So
we're talking about getting Latinos involved. We need to have really extensive meetings and activities that will teach the process to people so that they know from step one they're not going to get knocked off the ballot because they've done it properly in reference to petitions, in reference to finances, in reference to establishing a committee.
Okay, but you know, like maybe the entire community is not behind that concept, but it's a logical progression of what to do in order to change the dynamic and create an equity for everyone, and equity means equality between everyone. So maybe that's going to fall on your back because
I'm letting you know that there needs to be an uprising. There needs to be a consciousness that you got to get to the table. In other words, right now, the table, we're not anywhere near it.
I know we're not at the table. The question is, why is it that those people who have the heritage that we're talking about, why aren't they rising to the challenge? Are they just hanging around doing nothing?
No. I'll give you an example. I mean, most people today in the economy, I have 2 and 3 jobs. By the time they get home, they may have a chance to have dinner. You think that they're going to get involved in the situation of how to get into the ward politics and getting involved into city politics and becoming
they're trying to earn a living.
Forget about earning. They're trying to survive. Right. And so what I'm telling you is that, in my opinion, to get to the table, we need to bring out the leadership in the city of Yonkers, Latino leadership that needs to be
organized. Where are they? That's the whole thing. I can't understand where they are. Where they're hiding out.
Even those that are elected officials
and have an Hispanic background, I don't see anything that defines them as being Hispanic. I don't see them trying to bring about a greater initiative into the community. At the same time, it doesn't have to be one-sided. That's the whole point. Equity means everyone. You lift everybody up to the same level. Isn't that the whole purpose of it all?
Hesse, I never lose hope. My hope is that listen to me, Hesse. I'm a person of hope, and I think that we will have, hopefully, in the very near future. I mean, as you well know, they're projecting that the city of Yonkers, by the next census, will be over 100,000, which means that we'll have 50% of the population. 50% of the population. Maybe my hope is that they will be an awakening whereby we will see that when we look at City Hall, when we look at city contracts, when we look at all the developers, when we look at the schools, when we look across in healthcare, that, you know, there's a lot of inequity at all levels. I mean, as you all know, all of these facilities, many of the construction that's taken place in the city of Yonkers is for the upper middle class. It's not for the middle class or the low and working mm-hmm. class families. So we're really what
right.
we're looking at is a large number of families are leaving Yonkers because they can't afford to stay.
Correct.
And that's a major issue. I know families, Latino families, that say, you know, we're moving back to the Bronx, we're moving to White Plains, we're moving to different Mount Vernon, we're moving to different parts because I can't afford. I lived in Buena Vista, or I lived on Riverdale, or I lived on Morris.
No, I hear what you're saying, but I also don't where you lose me is what is it that's required of companies that can build affordable housing, for example, which is required in the city of Yonkers because we don't have enough affordable housing? Or is it that people just want to make more money and they want to build high-end property? So what are they doing? And why aren't they coming here to give us affordable housing?
Well, I think if you saw, you know, when there was an attempt, I believe, by on Ludlow Street for the development that they were going to bring up the percentage of affordable housing and the units that were going mm-hmm. to be down there. It was vetoed by the administration to give more opportunities.
Okay.
So when the economic development application was submitted to the city, there was some council members that wanted it to be increased from, let's say, 15 to 20% or 25% of affordable housing.
I remember that.
Affordable apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And it was vetoed by the current administration, so it remains the same. So that's what I'm talking about. In other words, until you sit in the positions of power in the city of Yonkers, you're going to constantly be just receiving everything that comes from it because you're not in the position of making a change. And that's what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if we're going to talk about change in the city of Yonkers.
Well, is the problem? Well, okay, the administration took one particular perspective, but I didn't hear anyone challenge that, and that was the problem. Are people afraid to challenge the reality that they realize is not equitable, and why don't they? Because there were a couple of people on the city council, but they were very, very quiet. Like a, you know, big deals. They said one thing once, and they never really promoted it at all.
I remember there were some people. Yeah,
no, I can't speak for them either. And the truth is, they don't even speak for themselves. That's the bottom line.
Well, my point to you is that when an opportunity for affordable housing was on the table, it was basically voided. It was voided, and it was basically overruled, and the administration said no, and that was the end of it. And they didn't have the votes to basically overturn his veto. So,
right.
So that's real. I mean, I'll give you an example of economics. You're talking about education and housing. Recently, mm-hmm. the Yonkers Joint Schools Construction Board is building the school on 73 Lawrence Street for the Honorable Sonia
yes.
Sotomayor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine that 62% of the Yonkers public schools are Latino. Here's a school that's going to be made, built for in honor of one of the Supreme Court justices and a dynamic,
correct.
You know, woman. And, you know, if we look at it, the people that are building it are savvy engineers and KG&D architects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would have been something. It would have been exciting to have said that it was done by, you know, Velez Construction. Here's a Latina woman who was on the Supreme Court. We're going to build a school
yeah.
for her, and we go to X, Y, and Z corporations that have been doing business in Yonkers for 100 years. Same people, Savin Engineers
mm-hmm.
and KG&D Architects. I'm sure they're very very competent people. But I'm sure there are also very competent people out there in the Latino community that are engineers and architects that could have worked, whether it's subcontractors or co-developers or whatever it was. And
so
that's what I see.
Why aren't we including as a society? Why are we not including more people? Can we not bring in more people into the fold, or is that the game plan? not necessarily just in Yonkers, but everywhere, keep the status quo going because we're making the money, and keep everybody else out because we don't want to share any of the wealth with them. Is that the human dynamic?
I would say you're not far away from it. The individuals that are here in the city of Yonkers are, it's the same developers. I mean, you have to read between the lines. They're the same developers.
Yes, absolutely.
They're
right.
The board that makes up the decision in reference to who's going to get the contract. The chairperson is
like the IDA.
No.
No.
It's the Yonkers Joint Schools Construction Board. Yonkers Joint Schools Construction Board is the board that deals with educational construction in the city of Yonkers.
I see. I didn't realize that.
Who appoints the members to the board? That's the one thing, all right? And who's the chairman of
the board? Is that mayor?
The mayor.
Uh-huh.
Now, they make a determination as to who's going to get the contracts and who's going to do the development in the city.
Is that part of the problem, too? Should the mayor be in charge of that? Because there is no equity.
Whether he should or shouldn't, he's the chairman, as
he is
the chairman of the Industrial Development Agency as well, which gives all the pilot programs for the pilot contracts to all the developers in the city of Yonkers.
Uh-huh.
So that's just the reality of life.
Of life outside of Yonkers? Is that the reality that we could say exists in White Plains or in Mount Vernon? Is that the reality?
I can't speak for other municipalities, but I know that politics is politics is politics is politics.
That's true.
I can't speak for those cities. But I can speak for Yonkers.
So Bob, at the end of the day, the politics is defined by people, and people they have their own deficiencies or exemplary, whatever. And so at the end of the day, the baseline is the same because it's the ingredient of the human condition that is defining all these things. So how do people compete? How do people infuse the system with something better? Is there a mechanism, or do we have to change the mayor? Is the new mayor going to change the dynamic?
I'm not saying you are. But what I'm saying is that if I had to find solutions to these problems, it's gonna be long term. It's not short term. It's not gonna be short term.
It's gotta be long term. Right.
So if you're gonna talk about it, we need some people who are gonna be the glue in the city of Yonkers to bring people together again. That has to be number one. Number two, the way Assemblyman Sage said, "Grow your own in education," which I agree with 100%. Whereby we would have people of color representatives, so that we can have people at the principal level, at the teacher level, at the counselor's level. A psychologist level, self-therapist, he mentioned. I think all of those things are excellent to have people that are bilingual and multicultural because you're dealing with a bilingual, multicultural community. I think that's very important. But I think we need to kind of jump to a different level when it comes to government. We need to grow our own so that we can get future mayors in the city of Yonkers to be Latino. Because as he talked about in education, when you got Latino, bilingual, bicultural teachers and administrators, students do better. If we have bilingual, bicultural people in City Hall, people will do better because there will be more equity.
Yeah.
There'll be more inclusion, and it's gonna take time. People that are working in the city of Yonkers are excellent employees. I'm not saying anything negative against them. I'm saying that the next generation of municipal employees has to be representative of the community that we have.
Because the population is changing, and I've been here like 25 years covering Yonkers, and I've seen population changes that are huge, unbelievable. At one time there was a large Jewish population, gone. There used to be a large Ukrainian population, diminished quite a bit. You have an infusion of Hispanic population from many, many different countries from all over Central and South America and the Caribbean, and also from Spain. But when you put it all together, these are the changes that are taking place, and there is a dynamism to those changes. So how do we build from where we are at present? How do we move forward? And can we create an equity?
Well, I think
not
we can.
Inequity, but can we create
In the short term, the political forces in the city of Yonkers need to know that there's a united front of voters that are looking for change in City Hall. That's not a short term. So that has to be done.
No, I understand. So how do we bring about a engaged and involved voter turnout, particularly from the Hispanic community, because they have certain interests and certain desires.
It has to be done before. In other words, it has to be done before. You can't talk about it afterwards. In other words, the political powers in this city need to understand both parties, Democrat and Republican, even though I keep saying that they're both really Republicans, one just running as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But
right,
you have two candidates in the city of Yonkers, one's a Republican and one is a registered Democrat,
uh-huh.
and they need to understand that there are almost 90,000 Latinos and that there is approximately, let's say for argument's sake, 40% of them are registered to vote. Just a significant
mm-hmm.
number. That significant
Absolutely.
Number needs to be informed on what is Yonkers and what's going on in Yonkers and why we need their vote and the importance of needing their vote. And then we need to understand that there needs to be meetings arranged with the mayor and other candidates in the city of Yonkers and let them know, hey, this is a committee of 50 or 100 people that, as you said, they're married, they have children, so forth and so on, and they have members of their association, that this is what we want, and this is what we need so that we have equity in the city of Yonkers. And you're talking about employment, you're talking about development, you're talking about housing, affordable housing, you're talking about education, you're talking about health care. All of those things are critical to all the communities in Yonkers, but now that we're almost 50% of the population, it's significant to our community.
Most definitely. So what's missing here from the dynamic? Is it because everyone's already entrenched and there's no movement? Is there a lack of fluidity? Can we evolve to something better?
I think eventually. I mean, it's like anything else. So you have people that are compromised in the city of Yonkers. People are compromised.
Mm, yes, definitely.
And that happens. That's life. And
that's interesting.
You know,
yeah.
But I think eventually what happens is that they'll come out of that compromise, hopefully some of them, or new leadership that develops in the city of Yonkers and sees the inequities and highlights them and brings them forward. I mean, the Spanish Foundation has been bringing on, they did about maybe 10 or 5 or 10, I remember, reports throughout the years whereby they talked about the inequities in City Hall and in the city of Yonkers in reference to the Latino
mm-hmm.
community. I'm talking 1970s. So this is nothing
uh-huh.
new. But now the numbers are different. The numbers, I mean, an example.
Yeah, because the numbers keep changing.
Imagine, just think of it this way. 1992, Mayor Selesky, he was elected
uh-huh.
mayor. There was a three-way race with Angelo Martinelli. What's his name? Peter Cima.
The case?
And
Cima, right.
So Selesky
right.
won. Now, Mayor Selesky
mm-hmm.
hired a Latino as a deputy mayor.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Selesky hired a Latino as a press secretary. Terry Selesky hired an African-American woman as a special assistant to the mayor for the community. And you know who that was?
No idea.
Andrea Cousins.
Oh, really? Wow.
So Mayor Selesky, I believe that Andrea Cousins was an English teacher at the time, and she became a community activist, and he hired her as a special assistant to the mayor's office to outreach to the community. And she did an excellent job, which really propelled her into the county legislative position and then ultimately to the New York State Senate. So this is a man, you may like him, dislike him, I don't really care, but he took the initiative to bring Hispanics and African-Americans into the administration. If you look
well, that's the question. Do we have that sort of demeanor today? Because I think it may have started with him, but I think it was lost somehow for the last, 30 years. It's not something that I've seen happen. It's like it's all waned. It's like all forgotten, and it doesn't seem to make – maybe we don't know the history. That's the problem. We don't have a repertoire of history that you know you're familiar with. Maybe that's my ignorance.
Well, I think history is very important because what happens is that, you know, when you have a background you have the information available, you know what did happen in the city of Yonkers in the past. And then, I mean, I look at it this way. These are all fine civil servants, good workers, and I know all of them. But I mean, but it's not inclusive. I mean, you're talking about Mike Spano, Steve Levy, Anthony Lanzi, Denise Ejiziako. This is the administration that we have in Yonkers that represents the city of Yonkers, and which 40% is Hispanic. You're talking about Bob Cacace, Matthew Gallagher, Chris Sampieza, Tony Pagano, Thomas Meyer, the chairman of the Democratic Committee, John Lazuski, Steve Sansone, Sam Borelli, Carlos Moran, Paul Summerfield, Michael Sabatino, Kelly Chiarella, and Reverend William Norman. You know, my point to you is that when you talk about a cabinet, the cabinet is made up of non-Hispanics. There's not a Hispanic in the city of Yonkers cabinet of the mayor, the deputy mayor, and the key people in city government.
Down to like the last 3 minutes. Is there a way of changing this dynamic? What's it going to take?
Well, I think it takes basically a lot of grow your own for municipal employment, grow your own for political positions, grow your own for networking and political developers. You know, we need to grow our own, because I like that expression by Nader Sage, the assemblyman.
Yeah, it's perfect.
We need to grow our own so that we can get people to get involved in city government, that we can get people involved in the city council. We can get involved with people to run for mayor. We can get people. And I'm talking about realistic challenges. That's a very key word, realistic challenges.
Yes,
you know,
realistic.
We need also,
So what it boils down to is we need to hear this concept of grow your own in order to be able to recognize where we need to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it can be done. I've seen it done.
It can be, yes.
Done in reference to different communities. I mean, we've seen it. It can happen. We need organization. We need structure. And we need to understand what the mission is. If we understand what the mission is and our goal is, and then we understand it, we can then participate in it in a committee that can really move this agenda forward. Don't give your vote out to someone because he says, hola, ¿cómo está usted? You know, that's not, I know in the old, I remember in my, I used to see people and say, oh, I'm going to vote for him because he speaks Spanish. You know, I mean, please. But that was reality. Or, you know, I'm going to grant you that you can have parties throughout, the city. That's not being getting a piece of the pie. We want to get a piece of the pie in the city of Yonkers, and it takes a struggle. It takes a confrontation. And even though, I'm not talking about a physical confrontation, I'm talking about a political,
I'm going to have to stop you because we're down to the last 10. we're going to have to talk again because I'm down to the last 10 seconds, so we're going to get cut off.
All right.
So we're going to have to do this again. So I want to
thank
you for
much,
being
Ed.
With us today. What a pleasure. All the best
thank
to you.
Thank you, Izzy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Fernando Fuentes, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to him again. Take care. Goodbye, folks. Bye.